for some years now. I've been kind of an upskilled, multi-skilled professional. So I do a bit of physio, a bit of nursing, a bit of occupational therapy. I am also dabbling in a little bit of social work, basically just whatever the patient needs at that point to keep them safe and deliver continuity of care. So I have a lot of fingers in a lot of pies in terms of various areas of the NHS. So I offered to do this for VI Talk because obviously being registered blind myself, I can give it from both sides. So from the official side, but from also from the trying to cope with COVID and what I've done at work and how I've put social distancing in place or not, as the case may be. So I just thought, because I've got both hats on, really, that I can potentially answer questions in a different way than most other people can. With that being said, if you have logged on this call to ask me, have I got COVID, and that's the only reason you're here, please log off because I'm not going to answer you. What I can do is give you government guidance on the symptoms, the most up-to-date statistics, etc. But I am not your physician. I will not advise on personal medical circumstances without a full consultation, which I cannot do on this call. So that's the limit within which I can answer from a legal framework and standpoint. Within that limit, I am more than happy to answer whatever you throw at me. If I don't know, I'll tell you I don't know, and we can perhaps problem solve it between the group. But yeah, that's where I'm coming from. So does anybody have any questions?
Okay, so if you guys want to, I don't know if everyone knows how to, but if you know how to raise your hand and you've got a question, if you can do that, then I will ask you to speak. Okay, Sean, if you want to ask a question.
Yeah, hi, Carly. First of all, thanks for coming on. I don't know whether you're going to be able to answer this question, but I hear that it's actually, and this is purely on selfish reasons, I hear that it's two-thirds of the people who have died from COVID-19 are men. Are we anywhere near to finding out why that might be?
The short answer is no, because we are in this virus's infancy. There's also a very high proportion of the Black, Asian and ethnic minority communities that are also dying from this. We don't know why. I can tell you that currently 60% of men versus 40% of women have been logged as having COVID. So it would be within keeping that the figures of deaths would be around the same kind of statistical mark. We don't know why. There's been some kind of theories bounced around about why certain ethnic minorities get it, but we don't know why men get it versus why women get it. The split is quite small, so it is 60-40, so it's not far off being halfway. And it may be because women have more respect for social distancing versus men, which is the theory that's been floated that I actually don't agree with. But that's one that's been pushed around because you have a lot more fellas who are still getting together for a booze or for sporting events, etc. But the short answer is we do not know. There's so much about this that we still don't know. There's a lot of research studies going in to look at it, though. But yeah, at the minute, we don't know, I'm afraid.
And just quickly, while I'm on, AstraZeneca have said today that they've got a vaccine that they're going to launch in September, according to Sky News. Is that fake news or is that, do you think that's real?
I think if it was real, we would know a lot more about it. There's a lot of companies that are saying they've got vaccines. What they actually mean is they're doing vaccine research and they're having some really, really good headway towards making one. There are vaccines that are in first stage clinical trials at the minute, but it normally takes from start to finish, if we are working at maximum capacity possible, it normally takes 18 months for a vaccine to run through all the testing and be deemed safe for human use. We're nowhere near that point yet. I mean, the timeline may be sped up because COVID is so serious and crippling to economies. But ultimately, we're not there yet. We do have, there was one lady from our staff group that went into clinical trial about 3.5 weeks ago, and she was one of the first. So we are still a number of months away. If they're saying they're going to launch, because I know this company is one that we're working with, then that is not a definite. That is a hopeful. There's nothing definite in the pipeline at the minute at all.
I mean, it's still 4 months away, September, isn't it? So,
that's
great. I'll let somebody else have a shot. Sorry, go ahead, Carly.
Yeah, they could, but it's like saying my new video game is going to be ready for launch in 4 months' time. You don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 months. We also don't know whether this is going to mutate, how it's going to change, and how people are going to respond to the vaccine, because we're only 3.5 weeks into clinical trials. It could, sometimes it takes 6 weeks for the body to react to things. So it's a bit premature, not impossible, but not definite by any stretch.
Yeah, they obviously don't know about side effects and things like that at this point.
No, we're far off knowing.
Hopeful. Still, it's promising, I would say.
Yeah.
I will allow somebody else to ask a question.
Lovely, thanks.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Okay, so I know that Sue raised her hand. So, Sue, would you like to ask a question?
I wanted to ask about what you feel about the risks are of being guided by somebody, because I'm one of these people that doesn't have a guide dog, and I've only just started learning how to use a rollerball cane. So I very much get out and about when everything's fine by taxis, and then having, if I go out with my guide, being guided.
So it very much depends on a couple of factors. So it depends on whether your guide has guided anyone else before you hang on to their arm. It depends on how good they are and how good you are at hand hygiene. It depends on how long you're with each other, and it depends where you go. So in the best possible circumstance, you would be guided for as short a period of time as possible outside, with no prolonged contact with anyone inside. So things like taxis carry a much higher risk than a sighted guide walking with you in the street. And that's despite social distancing, because in a taxi or in a closed environment, you don't know who else has been in there. You don't know what the hygiene of the taxi is like. If someone has COVID, then you potentially pick it up on your clothing, and then you touch your clothing and touch your face and transfer it. Closed environments are much more risky than open ones, which is why the government's saying that it's okay for households to meet on a very gradual basis, but always outside, because the risks of contracting it once you're outside are much, much lower than inside. So if you were having a sighted guide who was going to take you for a walk for 30 minutes versus a sighted guide that was going to help you do some taxi travel for 30 minutes, then the risk of the walk would be much smaller than the risk of sitting in a taxi with somebody. Social distancing is just not something I would argue that we are able to effectively maintain at all times. And for somebody like yourself, if you have only just started to learn to use a rollerball cane, then you need to weigh up the benefits of you mental health wise being able to get out and stay focused and do your normal routine versus the potential risk of going out being non-socially distanced from someone for potential lengthy periods of time. So my advice would be, if you're going to go out, keep it as short as possible. Stay outside for as much of the time as you can, and make sure that you both practice very good hand and arm hygiene. And I cannot stress that strongly enough. If you are having sighted guide, then they need to be using alcohol gel or soap and water right up to their elbows, so right up to the bit where you touch. And you need to be very on board with your hand hygiene so you don't transfer anything to them.
Would it be a good idea to wear a face mask?
That's a difficult one, because with my science and medical hat on, I think they're not very good. They stop you spreading it to other people. They don't massively protect you. And the reason that I'm hesitant to say that is because we wear them at work, and we wear very, very basic PPE that in my personal view isn't. It's not wonderful, shall we say. It's a surgical mask. It's not sealed. It's not anything other than being fluid resistant. And yet we have only had 1% of our staff that have been off with COVID, and we cannot confirm that any of them caught that at work. So there was no one that was self-isolating other than work who caught COVID. It's all been from people who've been having exposure in supermarkets and things. So it's not going to hurt, but I don't know how much it's going to help either. If it makes your sighted guide feel better, if it makes you feel better, then by all means wear them. But be aware with these face masks that Ideally, you need disposable rather than washable ones, unless they can be washed at 60 degrees and unless your filters can be changed. Because if your filters cannot be changed and you wash them at a lower temperature, chances are you're going to transfer the virus onto the inner surface of the mask, which is then held against your nose, which massively increases your risk of contracting it. So disposable where possible. When you take them off, you need to be very careful not to touch the front of the mask. You must always touch the inside and roll it inside out so that the front is all kind of on the inside. So you're almost turning the bit that is against your face over. So that it's on the outside. Dispose of them immediately if they're disposables. If they are washable, you need to bag them up. You need to thoroughly sanitize your hands completely once you take off a mask. If you're wearing gloves, ideally your mask should come off while you have your gloves on, be binned or bagged, and then your gloves disposed of. And again, your hands very thoroughly sanitized, particularly after using masks.
Right. I mean, the thing is that... I've been, as I say, socially isolating now, you know, from the 19th of March. And when you live on your own, I suppose my idea is eventually that, say, probably in July, if, say, the pubs opened up again, I would sort of maybe take the risk to go out in a taxi.
Are you shielding?
But no. I'm not.
No,
I'm,
so you're just being careful.
Or I'm in good health. It's just my eyesight problem.
Okay.
But I am finding it, you know, that's sort of, when you live on your own, all my social life is sort of round pubs and going to restaurants and meeting friends. So
there are local groups. If you contact your council, if you're feeling that you're kind of on a limb and you haven't really got a lot going on, there are loads of volunteers who are happy to have conversations over the phone or point you in the direction of local groups or resources.
Well, good, yes, I've got them, thanks. I've got this one and KVIM, which is Kirklees Visual Impaired Network. So, yes, I've got that. It's just I'm getting a bit stir-crazy because I've only been in my garden.
Yeah.
And house. So, anyway, I'll let somebody else have a go. That was very interesting. Thank you.
No problem.
I'll
thanks.
Take on board what you've said.
Okay. Thank
thanks,
you.
Thanks, Sue. I think the next person to raise a hand was Sandra Kane. Sandra, if you want to ask your question. I'm assuming she's still
Hi.
On the call. Yeah.
Yeah, I am. It's okay. I just unmuted myself. Hi, Carly. Thanks
Hi.
For this. I'm in a similar position to Sue. I've been totally isolated by myself. More or less since the beginning of lockdown. I have managed to kind of, you know, get involved in various different things, so it's not as bad, but I am really missing friends and family, seeing them face to face. And I'm considering venturing out soon as well. What my question is about the tests, now that they've become available to everybody over five, if we all have them, and then you know, those that are negative go on to get infected in the future, is there, can you repeat the test? Because I read something about a health worker who was having problems getting a second test because there's been lost in transit. So once you're actually registered as having the test, can you repeat it in future? And then what I've read as well about these tracing apps is that they'll, or not the tracing apps, but these apps that can indicate people nearby who may or may not be infected, is that can only tell you whether that person near you has had the test, not whether they're positive or negative. So it is, I guess what I'm thinking is there's no kind of fail safe way, really, is there, around it all? Because you might test negative and then need to retest, or You know, you might be out and about and be alerted to somebody that's had the test, but not necessarily of, you don't know whether it's a negative or positive test. And if you're saying that that the masks aren't necessarily going to help you, I guess my question is, what's the best practice for us? How can we best prepare?
To touch on the first point, you can repeat the test. The reason that the healthcare worker had problems, and I do wish that she hadn't made such a song and dance over it, because they were very relevant problems, but relevant in a different way than most people think. So her test was lost in transit. At the moment, right. If you are symptomatic, you need to isolate for 7 days or until the symptoms are gone for 2 days, whichever is later. So with her, when a key worker has symptoms, they need to be tested within the first, 4 days. I can't remember whether it's 3 or 4. No, the first 4 days of having symptoms, because it can take up to 4 days for the test to come back. So if they get tested on day 3, then they will have a test back by day 7. So we know whether they need to continue isolating if they've got symptoms or whether they can come back to work. If they test after day 4, there's no point, because mostly they are going to be symptom-free at that point when they're ready to return to work by the time the test has come back. So that's deemed to be a wasted test, because you don't need to test. Testing is not a requirement. It's something that the government are giving you to enable you to look at whether you've got it or not. It doesn't change the fact that you've got COVID. So the vast majority of COVID is done on symptoms. Now, these tracing apps, they do not tell you on your own phone who's had a test that's near you. So it doesn't go on, say, my phone is near your phone. It wouldn't ping your phone and say, Carly's near you and she's had a test. What it does is it shows a map of your local area. It shows how many people in your local area have tested positive.
So it does say positive, right.
Yeah. Okay. So it's very limited. It will show, for example, in my area, there are 3 people who have had COVID in the whole of Malvern. Now, I can tell you for a fact, because I have treated them, that there are more than 3 people in Malvern who have had COVID, but they haven't all tested. Or they've tested negative and then have gone on to develop symptoms. So the tracing app is trying to reassure people, which it does, because it shows low figures, but actually it doesn't change how you need to be careful. In terms of repeatability, you should only be asking for a test if you're symptomatic. If everybody asks for a test when they're not, then the people who need them are not going to be able to get them. And think of that what you will, but that's a government problem. It's not a people problem, and people need to be responsible with that so that people can get them when they need them. You can repeat it as many times as you need to. If you're symptomatic, each new symptom block, you can request a new test. There is a reliability of these tests is only 70%, so they're not very good. They're 70% good, but there are potentially 30% of people who are going to get false negatives, which is why the government is saying symptoms are your primary decider as to whether you need to isolate or not. So for VI people, the problem is compounded, because these tests are not accessible. And I personally do not know how you would make them accessible other than having very specific staff who need to do them. Because when you swab the back of the throat, you perform what's called an aerosol generating procedure. So it scrapes potential virus away from the lining of your mouth, and it puts it into a very, very fine droplet mist, which you would then breathe out into the face of the person testing you. So if someone's going to test you, they would need to have full PPE, as though they're working in an intensive care unit. We don't have enough of that for our intensive care units, never mind our testing units. So if you're lucky enough to live in a household with somebody who can see, then testing is quite accessible to you if you get the person who can see to carry it out, because ultimately if you've got the virus, they probably have as well, because they're exposed to your breath for a prolonged contact every day because they share an environment with you. If you don't share a household with someone, I don't know what the answer is in terms of testing, because you would have to have a volunteer come and do it, and there are no volunteers within local organisations who could or would be asked to do that. So you'd be reliant on friends or family. who would then potentially also get a dose of the virus. In those circumstances, face masks would be much better than having no face masks. Mm. But that's a bit of an ethical and a moral dilemma that I don't actually know if they can address. I don't know if they've tried to address it. There hasn't been enough of an uptake or a national reporting system that's in place for that at the minute. So, in terms of how you get the test, that is something that you would need to discuss with your local testing centre, but I'm not sure they would have any answers for you, even if you did.
Mm. And what do you mean in terms of they're not accessible?
You need someone to swab your throat.
Right, so you wouldn't be able to self-swab it?
Not unless you can see well enough to see your tonsils in a mirror.
Right, okay.
So if the swab touches saliva, it inactivates the virus and the test will come back as a negative. I swabbed with my husband's help. I think I probably did have a mild version of it, but my test came back negative because even with help, it touched some saliva. And I know what I'm doing in terms of swabbing. I've swabbed lots and lots of patients, so I know what I'm doing, and I still couldn't do it on myself.
Right. Thank you.
Sorry, it couldn't be more positive there. But I mean, symptoms are still the primary guide anyway. You could be tested, you could come back negative, you could still have symptoms and still be asked to isolate. So, the only thing that you're missing out on is knowing whether you've had COVID. And in a couple of months' time, we'll have antibody tests that'll be able to tell you that anyway. So I don't actually think this one's a fight worth fighting until a couple of months down the line when we can legitimately say we had no access to these tests, therefore we need access to the antibody tests.
Right, yeah. I mean, would your advice be to kind of just sit tight until then?
My advice to everybody is if you do not absolutely need to leave your home, do not leave your home. Being on a ventilator is really crap. It's really, really bad. And that ultimately is the risk that every person runs when they step outside their home. If you need to leave to eat, or to attend a hospital appointment or for something necessary, then absolutely leave your home. If you can go on a walk and not come into contact with very many people, if you have the same sighted guide all the time and both of your households are isolated, then the risk is minimal. But you need to be always risk managing. Every time you go out, you need to think about who you're going to come in contact with and who the person that you're touching is also in contact with.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Justine, you had a question. You raised your hand.
Hi, Carly. I suppose it's a general one. I was going to, similar to Sue's in a way, but if you've got a PA who kind of would normally take you out and about, obviously you can't access the community in the same way, but I was going to ask about kind of exercising or going shopping with a PA, but I guess you've kind of answered that in a way because, that was my question.
I think if you need to go, I mean, my first suggestion would be, can your PA pick up your shopping for you? Can you be on the phone with them? Do you have to go?
Yeah.
If the answer is yes, because your mental health will suffer if you do not go, then manage the risk with your mental versus your physical health. It's only you that can make that decision. If your PA is in an isolated household, if they only meet you and they don't meet many other people, if their social circles are limited, the risk is going to be less. If they are a social butterfly and they are not sticking to lockdown, the risk to you is going to be greater. It's really around managing how well you know your PA, how many other people they're seeing, because if they are a PA to many people that are in sheltered accommodation or elderly people, chances are they're probably going to have come in contact with COVID, because unfortunately all of our care staff, we're all seeing the same patient groups, we're all seeing COVID positive patients, so it is spreading via us into those communities.
Of course, she has a family, so I mean, I've not been out personally, it was just, you know, I know a few people have mentioned this, so that's great, thanks very much, Carly.
No worries.
I know that we've got a few raised hands, but I know that Katie had quite an unusual question. And so, Katie, would you like to ask your question?
Yeah, due to personal circumstances, I have to go for various hospital appointments at the moment. I went for one a few weeks ago and they were really, really, really good at what's the word? Well, they took, my partner came with me because I'm totally blind and it was just difficult to go on my own and stuff. My dad ended up having to take us as well, which was really awkward as well because we didn't want to get transport. Yeah. But my question is, the first time I had to go for an appointment, they were really good about taking both mine and my partner's temperature. They didn't let us in until they'd done that, everything like that. Yet when I went yesterday for another appointment, they didn't do that. And it kind of really concerned me and my partner a little bit. They just, it was almost like it was a normal day. Like at the hospital, there was nothing going on, if that makes sense. I just wondered what you thought about that.
How long ago was your first appointment?
Trying to think. About 4 weeks ago.
Roughly. The landscape was very different back then.
Yeah.
There was COVID everywhere back then. There still is. But in terms of hospitals, we've got our procedures a lot more under control. So because we didn't know who was COVID and where, we were very, very careful about where it was introduced and who was able to move freely around hospitals. I mean, we even got to the point where we were transferring patients between departments fully PPE'd up. The patients had to wear face masks. That's all stopped for a couple of reasons. Firstly, there's COVID everywhere. We know there's COVID everywhere, and we know that despite what we were doing, it wasn't working. People were bringing it in. We were having cases break out on the wards. We were having staff get sick. Nothing we did was enough. So there's an argument then to save the PPE for the people who need it most, which sadly are us frontline staff who are constantly exposed to it.
Yeah.
So they then stopped and they dialed back their processes a little bit. Now there's a lot more reliance on people who come in being self-aware and being sensible about whether they've got symptoms and whether they should be presenting to hospital. I mean, ultimately, taking your temperature doesn't tell you very much because you could have it for up to 14 days before you throw a temperature or before you show any symptoms. Okay, so the argument there was, actually, we are holding these thermometers in non-clinical areas, and by non-clinical I mean non-patient, like non-inpatient areas. There's a national shortage of thermometers. Why are we holding these when screening actually isn't going to benefit this clinical area in any way, because it doesn't tell us whether the patient has it or not? It's like testing. They used to test everybody. Every single inpatient got tested as soon as they came in. It didn't do anything because half of those patients were exposed to it after they came in, not before. Okay. So by testing, all they did was waste tests. It's all, everything now is symptom-based. And we did have very good take-up from the public. So there wasn't really very many people who were presenting at hospital with symptoms. And so it was, again, it was wasted resource, which sounds really cold. But I think that's the situation we're in. It's very much like a field hospital in the middle of a battle. We've only got so many resources and we need to push those to the front where they're needed. And anybody at the back is going to have to muddle along. You know, unless it's things like a dialysis unit or a cancer unit or somewhere where people are very immunosuppressed, then I wouldn't expect a temperature to be taken at a general outpatient appointment anymore.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But everyone was really, like, everyone didn't seem to be major, like in the other places in the hospital, they didn't seem to be socially distancing either, really, which was a little bit alarming, if
it's
that makes sense.
Because we can't. If you think about our jobs.
I don't mean the staff. I just mean people in general.
Oh, people are odd. People are very strange.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I see it an awful lot. I see every single day. I see people in huddles and I think, why? Mm. I don't get it. You're not. But yeah, I mean, it's their safety that's on the line. Sadly, it's everyone else's safety in the hospital as well. But ultimately, you can't teach stupid, can you?
Clearly not. Thank you for answering.
No problem.
That's interesting, Katie's question, because I went for a GP appointment on Monday and they still took mine and my husband's temperatures on our way into the GP surgery.
GPs, Joe, are a bit of a law unto themselves at the moment. GPs
I gather that.
Also refusing to do face-to-face visits. They're wearing full PPE for everything, despite the low stocks everywhere. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, GPs self-manage their own practice, and they are not prepared to take the risks that the rest of the frontline workers have to take. And they are in a position, a very enviable position, where they can insist and they can hold resource. And globally, well, I say globally in our country, I mean, they are doing just that. They are holding the resource back within their own practices, which is great for their practice staff, but it poses its own challenges if we need a GP to come and see someone. Generally, they'll send their nurse practitioner because they don't want to go.
Before I get the next person to ask a question, because there's a few people who've raised hands, I just wanted to say that I feel very lucky because I normally work in an eye clinic at Royal Devon Exeter Hospital, and I feel really lucky to be able to work from home. So I just want to say from all of us a big thank you to all of you guys who don't have that opportunity. Right, Helen. Next, I think, Helen Lawson. Wait and see if she works out. Unmute herself.
Have we got me?
Yep, got you, Helen. Go on. Fire away.
My thing is obviously, because I've got other health issues, not health issues, but we have to catch you, but I've got seizures, so I have home carers in. Is there anything I could be doing extra or physicians thinking about more for when I've got home care support?
Sorry, I didn't catch all of that. The signal went a bit funny, Helen.
Right, I'm in a situation where I have home care as close to me. I have seizures, so I can't do things like have a shower without having a carer present. And all the work wearing PPE, and we always say about the masks and things, is there anything I need to be extra careful about or any advice?
That's more of a difficult one because unfortunately you cannot social distance. And we find this with when we go in to assist people as well, social distancing just cannot be maintained. I would say that your carers ideally should be in PPE, but to underline that national guidance says we only should be wearing PPE for people who are COVID positive. So if your carers do come with no PPE, unless you are showing COVID symptoms, that's completely appropriate for them to do. We don't, because the amount of patients that we're seeing means that we will almost definitely have been in contact with a COVID within the last 14 days. There's no avoiding it with us. So we tend to PPE because the group of people that we are seeing, because they're mostly elderly, are very vulnerable. But national guidance says you only need to wear PPE if you are seeing someone with COVID symptoms. So in terms of advice, I would say if your carers appear symptomatic, if you hear them coughing and they can't give you a good reason as to why, then I would be asking for a different carer, or I would be speaking to the agency and reporting what's happened, because all of their staff are also entitled and able to test. And other than that, there isn't really a lot that you can do on your end, because the care agency should be safeguarding you from the other end. If you have any concerns, you can ask about whether the agency has had any COVID confirmed cases, although they do not have to legally tell you. You can ask whether any of their staff that have been in to see you have been tested COVID positive. But again, they don't have to tell you, because that staff member has a right to privacy. So unfortunately, on your end, you need to trust that your agency is protecting you. And if you have any concerns about that, you need to speak to the agency or the social worker who organises them for you.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Okay. Cork Hub, I know you've not asked a question yet and you've got your hand raised.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Hiya guys. Hi Carly. I just wanted to say that as a social worker, I've already had COVID. My family members are frontline A&E workers, so I got it off them. I live with them. So it was absolutely horrendous. It's the worst thing I've ever gone through. I was at home, but it was mild compared to obviously individuals that require hospital treatment. But just going back to, we've actually been now told that we'll be returning to office work on the 10th of June, well, the 8th of June. I was just wondering if you had any tips or tricks for how I can effectively self-distance within an office environment, and obviously home visits, because I honestly do not know how I'm going to be able to do the 2 meter social distancing with our service users who are young people and the families. And it's not really appropriate to be discussing offences that they may have committed at the bottom of the garden. That's even if they've got a garden, obviously in earshot of all the neighbours. So I just wondered if you had any tips for us in terms of how we can safeguard ourselves and obviously manage risk.
The short answer in your situation is that you can't. You're in the same situation that I am, which is okay. You're in someone's home, you're inside, you're within mm-hmm. 2 metres of them, you can't. What I try and do where possible, and it isn't often possible with me because I've got to be hands-on, is that I will sit across the other side of the room from them. There is an argument that you shouldn't be doing home visits unless they are absolutely necessary. And in a lot of cases, they aren't, because you can do a lot over telephone, via telephone review or video conferencing if you've got a PA that can report on the visual bits that you need. I do tend to do a lot of home visits. I don't get on with video conferencing because from a physio point of view, I don't trust
enough
because they're not a physio at the end of the day.
I mean, from our perspective, we have obviously been doing phone calls, but there will become an expectation because obviously it's a statutory role that we'll have to see young people at home. But yes. I was just wondering, obviously, if you've been out and about, whether there was anything, there were any techniques that you could pass on to us, which evidently I don't think there is in reality. There is obviously we're not hands-on with our young people, but nevertheless, if we're still in a confined space, which I don't think we should be. I mean, this is an issue that I just wanted to obviously clarify. If there's any other visually impaired people, if there's any kind of working document that we can put together, just something that we can give to local authorities. I mean, I'm happy to, help put something together just so we've got a coordinated response, because I think everybody's going to be in the same boat.
They are, but if your job requires you to go and see people, then you've got to go and see people.
Yeah.
And that's the difficult bit, because with me as well, they panicked with me initially and they took me off the front line, and then they discovered that they really needed me and they couldn't run the service with a physio down. So they then put me back on the front line and they tried to be picky about the patients that they sent me to, and that didn't work. And now they've got to the point where they've just put me back on as I was. You should be given appropriate PPE. You should have a discussion with whoever's running your infection prevention and control, because you should have an infection control lead.
Yes, we have, yeah.
Within the council. So I've had an agreement from mine, an unofficial agreement granted, but an agreement that I can wear a water-resistant gown over the top of my uniform if I source it myself. Oh, apologies, my door's just gone. I can wear it if I source it myself, but it's up to me to keep it clean and to maintain it. Bear with me 2 seconds.
No problem at all.
That's all
no
right,
problem.
Don't worry.
Don't worry, we can have a little nap. Well, it'll be Amazon hot takeaway.
Bear with me just 2 seconds.
Just while Carly's seen to her door, everyone, I'm aware that a couple of you have raised your hands for a second time. Is there anybody who'd like to ask a question who hasn't yet? If you can raise your hand, because I'm aware that Carly's not got an awful lot longer. So raise your hand if you haven't asked a question already.
Just to say, Joe, more than happy to let somebody else go first.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, if no one else does.
I'm kind of back. Goodness knows what's going on. Husband has disappeared, but the door's been left open, so he'll either come back or not. But I'm here.
Okay. Hawkup, did you have anything else you needed?
That's fine, Carly. Thanks for your response. Obviously, I'll make a note of that. And if I need be, I know you're on Facebook. I can always drop you a message if that's okay.
Absolutely.
You know, vice versa. Yep.
And we can always revisit this if Carly's happy to, maybe in a couple of weeks or something. We can always revisit this at a convenient time for Carly for kind of update if things change, because I'm aware that things change on a practically daily basis, don't they?
I was also going to say, if we don't get all the questions done, I'm happy to do one of these in a week or two's
brilliant,
time. And I'm happy to do them as often as needed, really.
Fair enough.
Thanks, Carly. Mm-hmm. No, that's brilliant. So no one else. So we've got. Sean, do you want to ask a question?
Yeah, obviously, I've got loads of questions, but I was more than happy for others to go first. You did say, Carly, about the frontline staff acquiring COVID at work was very low. Is that the case? I thought you said it was 1% or something.
1% of our staff.
Yes. Of that's physios, is it?
No, it's our staff within the trust.
Right, with that hospital trust, which I think I'll be honest with you, I thought that's quite remarkable. I thought it would have been higher than that. I thought, you know, a significant number of frontline staff would have caught COVID sort of in the course of dealing with patients.
The numbers have been surprisingly low. We were quite shocked at that as well, but they have been surprisingly low. Bear in mind, though, that we are not intensive care, so we are not at the same exposure level as somebody who's doing it for, you know, 12 hours a day, three or four days a week.
Yeah, I'd be interested in what those numbers might be. I'm not asking you to go out and find them. Just, you know, it'd be interesting to know how at risk you are. You know, even with the PPE, you know, in dealing with it all the time. My other question was to do with if you've already had COVID-19 and recovered, the chances are you'll test positive for antibodies, and that could be a game changer. Is there any sort of anecdotal evidence of people acquiring COVID-19 for a second time once they have the antibodies?
Again, the theory is that you can't get it. We've had some reports from the Middle East where they've said that I think the number is 36 people who have previously had it have tested positive again, but there is a query over whether they actually had it because there isn't enough information known about it.
Yeah, like a false positive in the first place.
It could have been a false positive, or I mean, there's no guarantees even that they've been tested, and I do hesitate to say this, but we know from prior experience that certain countries are not transparent with their figures, and they're not transparent with what they're doing and how. And it is from those countries that we've seen a resurgence in people who apparently were tested and now have it again.
Right.
So we don't know. The likelihood is that unless it mutates, once you've had it, you are immune. But it is a corona strain. Flu is a corona strain, as is the cold, and we know that mutates. So far, this one hasn't, but it's early days.
Yeah. I mean, that our friend who was a social worker said that she'd had COVID-19. So that would that give her some protection? I imagine it would.
It would. People, I think once they've had it, their risk factor is much lower than if they haven't had it or if they're not sure. Mm-hmm.
And another figure that sticks in my head is that 80% of people who catch COVID-19 are completely asymptomatic. Which suggests to me that, given that we've got hundreds of thousands, probably, I don't know, maybe a million people gone through hospital, that could mean that somewhere between 5 and 10 million people have already had it.
And it's probably likely. I mean, we are aiming for an 80% take up in terms of people who have had it in order to make sure that it doesn't keep spreading and keep becoming a pandemic. We need 80% of people to get it and recover.
That's so-called herd immunity, isn't it?
It is. And it's as much as people don't like it, it's a very valid concept. Unfortunately, the government approached it completely wrongly, but it is very valid and necessary in order to keep our country running and to keep people safe. We need people to get it. That's why diseases died out, because people got them and they couldn't spread.
Yeah, the disease dies out because it's got no host.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think at the beginning of all of this, there was talk of herd immunity being aimed for, and I think Sweden went for that method. But I think the media reacted so negatively to the idea of herd immunity that, and there were scare stories about, you know, overwhelming the NHS, that I think they abandoned those ideas.
Well, they didn't. They abandoned them officially. Unofficially, this reopening is pursuing that theory. There's no getting away from it. We either have herd immunity or we die. It really is that simple. Because we have to get it. Everybody has to get this. Otherwise, when it comes back around again, it's going to be a very different story.
At least 80% have got to get it.
Well, exactly. Which will then protect the 20% that it's too dangerous for to get. Because if you've already had it, you can't spread it.
Exactly.
So yeah, we, as hard as it is, we need to get it. There's no getting away from it. We need to get it, but we just need to be careful about how we get it. And ultimately, you need to make sure there's a bed in ITU for you if you get it. And that's what this has been about. It's been about slowing it down, making it longer to make sure we can keep as many people going as possible.
That is really interesting. I think probably the most profound thing you've said all evening. And having said a lot of profound things, I'd just like to say thank you very much for your time. Obviously, it's precious, and you know, I think I can speak for everybody. We've enjoyed listening to you immensely, and being able to ask questions of a clinician like yourself is gold. And I'll let Joe finish off. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Carly, have you got time for one more question or not? It's entirely up to you.
If it's a quick one, it's only because I've got to get back to work.
Yeah, and no, I'm that's conscious yeah. that it's not Justine, have you? Yeah, I know Justine's got her hand raised. So, Justine, is it a quickie? There she comes, I think. Justine? She did have a hand raised.
Did I?
You did. Sorry, you raised your hand.
Right. I didn't deliberately. I must have.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. Okay. Does anyone else have a very quick question for Carly? Nope. Okay.
I think we can cut her loose, Joe.
Yeah, Carly, thank you so much. If we can revisit this, that would be amazing. Yeah, that would be fantastic. But thank you so much.
Let me know where the demand is, Joe. I'm happy to schedule in another one, because I appreciate it's been shorter than I think we all thought it was going to be, but unfortunately it just goes with the territory.
No, that's absolutely fine, and good luck to you and all of your team and everything and everyone else, because we really appreciate it.
Thank you.